Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the ACE CPT exam. We are here going over chapter 9. Specifically, we're starting with our PowerPoint lecture. So, chapter 9 is probably one of the longer chapters and definitely does have a good amount of test questions in it. And specifically, chapter 9 is going to be covering the programming for movement, stability, and mobility, or specifically functional programming for stability, mobility, and movement. So when we think about this particular chapter, it's really going to assist you in creating programs for phases, well, for all phases, but really emphasizing phases 1, 2, and 3, as that's where most of your programming in your career will be from. So, as we move into slide number 2, talking about movement specifically, they begin this chapter really talking about why is there a need for movement, and specifically, gravity is what is pulling down on us at all times, specifically, and therefore we need to react to absorb the forces through the kinetic chain. Specifically, that law of gravity is going to be why we have to resist, or the element that we have to resist in order to create movement. So, just yet, a law of gravity we want you to understand is why we need to, or what we're resisting when we do move. So, as we look down towards the joint stability element, joint stability is basically the definition. We're going to basically talk about maintaining control over joint movement or position. So basically, stability refers to your ability to control that joint. And when we see movers or our clients moving, it's really important to understand that someone that lacks coordination and lacks control has less stability. So that is one way to look at stability. And then next is joint mobility. Specifically, we're referring to range of motion. So stability is the control over the joint, and mobility is the range of motion that is uninhibited around a joint or body segment. So when you have optimal stability, you typically have better mobility. That's one thing that they kind of talk about in this chapter for sure. So next definition we're going to talk about is arthrokinematics. Arthro meaning joint, and kinematics meaning movement. So arthrokinematics literally means joint movement. And with arthrokinematics, it's really you're dealing with the sensory input and motor output based on the neurological and physiological system. So you're receiving sensory information about where you are and what you're near, and then you move based off of that sensory information to get to where you need to be, or to lift or move that object. So it's a constant sensory input, motor output response that determines our movements, more or less. And arthrokinematics, we also want optimal arthrokinematics, which is proper joint mechanics, meaning you don't want muscle imbalances, you don't want postural deviations, or any structural issues that would lead to a injury or place stress on the entire kinetic chain. All right, so further on in this chapter, they get into specific joints that are more geared towards stability and other joints that are more geared towards mobility. So what joints are for stability? These are going to be the more rigid ones, the ones with less range of motion. And for stability, we have things like the scapulothoracic joint, the shoulder blade as it rests on the rib cage. You have the lumbar spine, big lower portion of the spine, a larger vertebrae that doesn't have a lot of mobility. The knee specifically is two large bones, the tibia down below and the femur up above, connecting together with a large base, we'll say, for each of those, or the connecting point is a large base. And then the foot, specifically the foot, we're talking about the lower foot, not the ankle. So those are all joints are for stability. Joint mobility is more for, these joints are better for moving, range of motion, creating faster movements potentially. What are those? Those are going to be the shoulders, the thoracic spine, comparatively, the thoracic spine compared to the lumbar spine, and then you have the hip, as well as the ankle. Those are all for more range of motion. Alright, so moving on to slide 3, we're going to talk about some movement concepts that they bring up, and this one I do like a lot. And I want you guys to understand it pretty well. The length-tension relationships basically refers to the degree of overlap with the contractile proteins actin and myosin and they determine the force output of the sarcomere muscle. Basically, what this says is that when a muscle is at its optimal length, it can produce the most tension. So if a muscle is hypertonic or tight, it's actually, its ability to produce force is lessened. Okay, so when you're a bodybuilder or you're an athlete and you're really looking to get as strong as possible, maintaining appropriate length in that muscle allows you to continually progress and get stronger. If you don't focus on any stretching as an athlete, and all you do is strengthen, the muscle will eventually become tight or hypertonic and therefore decrease the amount of force that can be produced. So to become a better athlete, it is important that you stretch. That's one thing. To go over more of those bullet points, it says too much overlap or a tight muscle is going to decrease force because there's basically the myosin and actin aren't as, or there's not as many to pull on because it's already shortened, we'll say. Too little overlap, too stretched, is going to be decreased force because they're weak muscles. They're too far apart. There's too much length in that muscle. So then the optimal overlap is what is the muscle at resting length. Okay, so that's when the force or the most force can be produced. And you'll see a lot of people in the gym performing repetitions around this resting length. So this is very common in pull-ups. For someone to not extend their elbows all the way and go do a full range of motion pull-up, they typically stay with their elbows bent all the time and go through a shorter range of motion. That's because the strongest point of a pull-up is right where the elbow is around that 90 degrees. And that's typically the strongest point. So that's where people like to stay to do more pull-ups, even though you want to, in order to emphasize a proper length-tension relationship, you want to work out through a full range of motion on the pull-up and on all exercises. So keep that in mind. And then why do athletes need to make flexibility a regular part of their exercise routine? We kind of talked about that already, but basically the appropriate muscle length leads to increased force production, and that's due to optimal overlap. So that's kind of what we went over before in the sense that athletes need to include a stretching program in order to optimize their athleticism, for sure. So the next principle that they talk about is going to be the force-couple relationships. And basically, force-couple relationships refer to the fact that muscles don't almost ever work by themselves. They're always working with another group of muscles in order to work together to create movement. So the direct definition they say is muscles working together to move a joint. The example that they give in the book is the hip flexors, erector spinae, and latissimus dorsi as they work together to anteriorly rotate the pelvis. So if those muscles are shortened, you get an anterior pelvic tilt, muscle imbalance, and those need to be lengthened. But that is what a force couple is those muscles all work to anteriorly rotate the pelvis. So when you anteriorly rotate the pelvis, it's not just one muscle working, it's all of them, and that is what a force couple is. So that is an optimal force couple in which all muscles are working appropriately. If one muscle is weak or tight or off in some way, that the whole system becomes compromised in the sense of improper force couple relationships are going to basically, it's basically characterized as a muscle imbalance and cause a less optimal movement. All right, so let's move over to slide number 4 as we talk about neural control. So neural control is going to just talk about the areas in which the muscle and movement is affected by the nervous system. So there's a few specific types of characteristics that we want to go over. First one is reciprocal inhibition. So reciprocal inhibition refers to a reflex inhibition of motor neurons on antagonist muscles when the agonist muscles are contracted. So to make that in layman's terms, when you contract your quadricep, the nervous system immediately sends a signal to turn off the stretch receptors of the hamstring. Okay, so if you're looking to push with your push or extend the elbow with your tricep, your body is going to turn off your bicep, the antagonist muscle. So once again, to say that when you try to do a tricep pushdown, your bicep is relaxed because your body sends a signal to do that, to inhibit the opposite muscle, or reciprocally inhibit the opposite muscle. Reciprocal meaning opposite, inhibition meaning to turn off. So autogenic inhibition is referring to basically the activation of the Golgi tendon organ through self-myofascial release and or static stretching, and how it inhibits the muscle spindles, allowing for further ranges of motion. So autogenic inhibition is basically me massaging a muscle to turn off the stretch receptors, which the stretch receptors are the muscle spindles. When you turn off those stretch receptors, further ranges of motion can be achieved because your nervous system isn't reacting to saying, oh, I'm being stretched too much, I'm being stretched too much. So, in that sense. So the next one is going to be synergistic dominance. Synergistic dominance is exactly what it sounds like. It is when a synergist dominates the movement that the prime mover is supposed to do. So when a synergist carries out the primary function of a weakened or inhibited prime mover. So the main example that typically occurs is during hip extension, since people sit down all day every day, their butt or their gluteus maximus, their butt muscle, gluteus maximus typically becomes weak. When that muscle becomes weak, it makes it harder for that muscle to be activated when you're looking to do a hip extension, like when you're bending over to pick up your son or bending over to pick up a barbell. And therefore, the hamstrings take over for that movement. When the hamstrings take over, they are not as strong at the movement, and it increases risk for hamstring injury or just injury to the back. Mainly I'd say the low back in that situation. Okay. Next one is altered length tension relationship. It basically is just saying that a length tension relationship is altered due to a muscle that is too tight. Therefore, it cannot produce appropriate force. You can think of this as a muscle imbalance. When you see muscle imbalances during someone's squat or during someone's, movement assessment, that is an altered length tension relationship, that muscle imbalance. All right, altered force couple relationship is next. And this is basically what we talked about before with a force couple relationship, but it's altered. And that's when a tight muscle or a weak muscle compromises movement at a joint. The example would be when the one muscle is too tight, let's say the hip flexors are too tight, causing the hips to be consistently anteriorly rotated, and therefore the other muscles won't perform their movements as easily. All right, so moving on from slide number 4 to slide 5, we're going to start to get into the programming aspects, and specifically going over stability and mobility. So stability, or phase 1, is the stability and mobility training. And specifically, phase 1 starts with enhancing the strength and endurance of the muscles surrounding the lumbar spine. So the main goal for phase 1 is to really assist someone with stabilizing their core and then lengthening the muscles of their entire body through mobility training. And that's the main goal. That's a great place to start. You're focusing on core, you're focusing on stabilization work, you're focusing on balance, and then you're also making a huge emphasis to increase the flexibility of all joints, or all muscles, we'll say. So we do want you to know, though, that what phase 1 is about, and you definitely want to start by enhancing the strength and endurance of the muscles surrounding the lumbar spine, because that's where the movement is, we'll say, the primary stabilization in almost all movement area is going to be that lumbar spine or that abdominal region. All right, the endurance muscles of the core are specifically slow twitch muscle fibers. They are the enhance stabilizer muscular endurance and reduce fatigue, and they have reduced fatigue. Basically, slow twitch muscle fibers are type 1 muscle fibers in which they're very enduring and have a lot of blood flow and allow for longer holds or longer contractions because of all that extra blood flow to the muscle. Most of this phase 1, is going to be dedicated to improving flexibility. So what types of flexibility or what techniques in flexibility are you using? Using myofascial release, static stretching, proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation stretching, or PNF stretching, and then dynamic and ballistic stretches. All right, and that picture right there is of a female doing a biceps femoris stretch or a rotational hamstring stretch. Definitely, if you know that you're tight, this would be a big goal for you to achieve. Being able to touch your hand or your toe with a straight leg in that rotated position, as it really tests the bicep femoris, IT band, low back flexibility. That'd be a good goal to have for sure. But if you're already flexible, hopefully you can do that, and that is very good, especially for athleticism, or being flexible during specific athletic movements. All right, next, as we move on to slide 6, more about stability and mobility training. So proximal stability, ACE refers to this a lot, and it really just refers to activating the core. And you want that as the first step in a fitness program, because you want to understand how the support system of all other movements can be optimized. And this is going to promote stability of the lumbar spine. That's where most of the emphasis is made. And it's going to be the deep innermost layer of muscles, or the deep innermost layer of the body, referring to proximal stability. And that is made up of vertebral bones and discs, spinal ligaments, or on the front and back of the spinal column. So that's like the deeper stabilization area of the, or stabilization mechanisms of the spine. And then the muscles that stabilize the spine are specifically going to be, and we want you to know this, number one, which is always asked on the test, so definitely know a lot about it, is the transverse abdominis. Okay. Then you have the multifidus, the pelvic floor, and the quadratus lumborum. Those are the main core, or deep innermost core muscles. Know that. The three stages are specifically going to be the core function, static balance, and dynamic balance. And that's referring to basically the learning to compress the abdomen by activate, or as far as core function and what you're supposed to be doing to activate the core. This is the three stages to activating the core, is learn to compress the abdomen by activating the transverse abdominis. And why would you do that? Because it creates intra-abdominal pressure and reduces joint and disc compression during loading. So all movements are going to potentially load the spine, and if you have appropriate core activation, specifically the transverse abdominis, then you have a lot less likelihood of injury and or having an issue happen. And once again, it is important for all clients to train the transverse abdominis, so teaching them the draw and maneuver, or teaching them abdominal bracing, is going to be very important with all beginning clients and all clients in general when you first start working with them. All right, next is static balance, the second stage, and you're basically working to create static balance over it, or basically what it is, it's over a fixed base of support, and enhances isolated stability. So basically standing in one place, not moving, creating balance, activating the core. Single leg core activation, something like that would be great. Dynamic balance refers to moving, or a dynamic base of support, and then enhance whole body stability when you're performing movements like walking or lunging and practicing stabilizing the core. All right, so moving over to slide number 7, we're going to talk more about stability and mobility. So once again, proximal stability refers to that core function. What do you want to do? You want to do the supine drawing in exercise. That is going to be most key that you teach your clients this. And it's really about drawing the belly button towards the spine, and you'll feel almost like you're just inside of your both hips. You'll feel a muscle that tightens up when you suck in really far, and that muscle should fatigue, and that really allows the transverse abdominis, or it's basically the transverse abdominis sucking in nice and tight, as well as the hip flexors kind of working to tuck the pelvis in a way. But how do you progress the spine drawing in exercise? You start with Kegels. Kegels are holding back going to the bathroom, those muscles, the pelvic floor. Then you focus on the draw-in maneuver. Then you do both together. It's really, really tough, guys. Trust me. Teaching someone how to do that, as well as even just learning how to perform it yourself, is very, very difficult. If you get 5 seconds, you're happy. And then obviously you'd want to progress more towards that 30-second to 90-second range, in which most exercises, or resistance training exercises, are performed. And then after you can do both together, then sustain both with normal breathing. A lot of people tend to like hold their breath during this time, but you want to try to get them to activate it and breathe normally. All right, then you can also do the quadruped position with the drawing in exercise. with an extremity movement, so arm or leg moving. Quadruped refers to being on all fours like a dog or like crawling as a baby. More or less, what we want you to know about this particular position is what to look for with new clients. And it says sometimes extending the limbs too far will deactivate the drawing in. Okay, so always be aware. See, if you look for the pelvis to move or the low back to arch, that is going to be the deactivation of the drawn in maneuver. Drawn maneuver creates a nice neutral pelvis, maybe even a slightly tucked pelvis or posteriorly rotated pelvis. And that's what you're really looking for with a draw maneuver. When you're in that quadruped position and somebody lifts their arm, extends their arm and their low back arches, that's tightness in the lats and needs to be addressed, meaning stretch the lats, foam roll the lats. But it causes lumbar lordosis, which leads to a loss in stabilization of the core segment. Okay. So definitely keep that in mind when you're looking at your clients as they do the quadruped arm raise, we'll call it. All right, so moving on to slide number 8. Furthermore, going over stability and mobility. So proximal mobility, as we went over proximal stability, is going to refer to the hips and the thoracic spine. So the immediate joints to the lumbar spine are going to be the hips and the thoracic spine. You're looking to improve mobility in those particular joints. Okay, so those two joints are immediately adjacent to the lumbar spine. You're looking to increase the ability of the thoracic vertebrae to extend, to flex, and to rotate. Okay, typically I'd say more commonly rotation and extension is what needs to be worked on the most. As people sit down all day in a slightly hunched position, rotation, or that limits the extension and rotation of the thoracic vertebrae, or the thoracic joints, we'll call them, the thoracic vertebrae joints, there you go. also you want to increase hip extension and hip abduction, meaning stretch the inner thighs as well as stretch the hip flexors. Those are the two main ones, as those are going to prevent those two. So one of the most common tight muscles that I, in my opinion, nearly every single client I've ever worked with absolutely needed to stretch these was the hip flexors, specifically the psoas muscle group and the rectus femoris muscle group. We do that through the kneeling hip flexor stretch, in which you take a band, wrap it around the ankle, and pull it over your shoulder, so you're kind of stretching your quad and your hip flexor at the same time. And then also take a soft ball to the abdomen just above the hip joint, in which you can get the psoas by taking that deep soft ball assists in the stretching process of the psoas in a deeper position. Right? But when you're moving those joints, you want to avoid compensations. So keeping a neutral pelvis during stretching is important. Monoarticulated refers to a muscle that crosses one joint. Muscle that crosses one joint is something like the soleus, that is an ankle muscle that does plantar flexion. A biarticulated joint is a muscle that crosses two joints. Something like that would be the gastrocnemius or the rectus femoris. Just know those because it's not really used in the field too much, but you do want to understand that when you're stretching, sometimes you need to have two joints in full extension, we'll say, or flexion to stretch that. And that's why when you do the kneeling hip flexor stretch to add the quadricep stretch to it, because that gets both the hip moving portion of the rectus femoris as well as the knee moving portion of the rectus femoris. Also, when you do a straight leg calf stretch, that allows you to stretch the gastrocnemius from the top and the bottom, as the gastrocnemius crosses the ankle joint and also crosses the knee joint. Okay, so biarticulated joints need to just extra focus when you are stretching. And those are the two main ones for sure. All right, exercises that assist with proximal mobility. Cat camels, that's flexing and extending the spine. Pelvic tilts, really focusing on the drawn maneuver and or arching rounding the pelvis, the low back, or anteriorly and posteriorly tilting the pelvis. Hip flexor mobility, doing the lying hip flexor stretch or half-kneeling triplanar stretch is what they recommend. There's pictures in the book there for you. Hamstring mobility, the lying hamstring stretch, okay? So just, lying and pulling the leg upward. Hip mobilization with glute activation, so basically the glute bridge and extending those hips as far as you can, activating the glutes, a supine 90-90 hip rotator stretch, kind of like a glute stretch more or less. Then the thoracic T-spine mobilization, something like spinal extension and spinal twist. Take a foam roll, extend over that with pushing the foam roll into the thoracic vertebrae. And then twists, lock the pelvis in position and really work on rotating that thoracic area or the upper back. And then posterior mobilization, rocking quadrupeds. Rocking quadrupeds are basically allowing for the knees to optimally fall into alignment. And hips as well. All right, so let's move on to slide number 9 as we continue to talk about stability and mobility. So proximal stability around the shoulder. So when we talk about proximal stability, they typically focus on the lower back region, but now we're emphasizing proximal stability of the shoulder because there is a core section or towards the more center of the body section of the shoulder joint. Specifically, we're talking about the scapulothoracic region and how you need to improve the stability of the scapulothoracic joint during upper extremity movements. When you push, when you pull, the scapulothoracic joint has to stabilize, otherwise the pulling and pushing will not be very effective. Okay, so there's certain exercises for that. I recommend wall angels, or T's, or I's, or Y's, but definitely want to increase the ability of the shoulder blades to be strong. Glenohumeral joint mobility, that's specifically increasing the shoulder flexion, extension, internal external rotation, those sort of elements, and stretching the muscles that perform those. Lats, pecs, anterior deltoids, posterior deltoids, rotator cuff, that sort of thing. As far as promoting scapulothoracic region stability requirements, you need proper thoracic mobility. And then also tissue extensibility. Tissue extensibility refers to just stretching. How do you do that? Through self-myofascial release. Stretches like the inferior capsule stretch, posterior capsule stretch, and anterior capsule pectoralis stretch, basically just a chest stretch. And then we want you to know the rotator cuff muscles for the test. Have these memorized. It's called the SITS, S-I-T-S muscle group, which stands for supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, and subscapularis. Okay, the main ones I want you to know are going to be the infraspinatus and teres minor, as those are external rotators, and then the subscapularis or larus of subscapularis as an internal rotator. If a specific muscle, if the chest rounds, if you notice internal rotation or protraction of the shoulders, the subscapularis is tight. All right. Furthermore, as we get into slide number 10. And talk about stability and mobility training continued. A muscle balance within the parascapular muscles. Okay, these are just the muscles that attach to the shoulder, the scapula, more or less, shoulder girdle. And the ability to resist the upward glide and impingement against a core acromial arch during the deltoid action. Basically, they're talking about impingement syndrome. An impingement syndrome is where when your shoulders are rounded, the core acromial arch is this subacromial space, which is basically your collarbone and the acromion process of the shoulder girdle. Those connect, and there's a small space in between the head of the humerus that in which ligaments run through as well as muscles run through. And impingement is when that pinches and the muscles become irritated and there's pain shown. So you basically need to strengthen the rotator cuff in order to, or the external rotators in order to ensure that the proper alignment of the shoulder occurs. The next bullet point is going over the closed chain kinetic movements. Specifically, there's a difference between open chain movements and closed chain movements. They're going to say, the way that they describe it is that the distal segment is fixed during movement with closed chain movements. That means like during a push-up, you have your hand on the ground and that distal segment, your hand, is not moving. Your body is moving up and down, but your hand is not moving because it stays in the same position on the floor. The opposite would be an open chain movement. Open chain is basically which the distal segment is mobile. This is when you do a bench press or a dumbbell chest press, and the dumbbell is what is actually moving, and your hand is moving, and your body is in a fixed position. So they say that the load and compressing joints increases the kinesthetic awareness and proprioception, more or less when using the closed chain kinetic movements. So what are some exercises that are good for stability and mobility regarding the shoulder joint? You have things like internal and external humeral rotation using like a banded resistance, diagonals, that's up across the body, reverse flies, that's your supine 90-90, or 90-90. And that's also, remember, the supine 90-90, the isometric hold, is really good for internally rotated shoulders to promote the strength of the muscles that externally rotate the shoulder. Prone arm lifts, that's basically what you're lift or facing down, you do a T while on the floor. Closed chain kinetic movements that are like weight shifts or closed chain weight shifts on like one hand. And then shoulder packing, which is more or less just loading your hand with a dumbbell and straightening your arm out while laying on your back, more or less. All right, so now we're going to talk about distal mobility as we move on to slide 11. Distal mobility really refers to mobility of the distal segments of the body. And the first thing they're going to talk about is static balance. Static balance refers, or basically when talking about the ankle joint, sometimes tightness in the calf leads to common lack of dorsiflexion and can alter balance and form. Tightness in the calf also leads to a excessive forward lean because the ankle cannot dorsiflex enough so that the upper body has to fall forward to maintain center of gravity. And so some training variables associated with distal mobility and static balance. Basically, you want to work on static balance 2 to 3 times per week. Always perform more near the beginning of the workout to activate some of the balanced muscles. And then perform one set of 2 to 4 reps, each for 5 to 10 seconds, depending on the exercises that you choose. All right, next is certain training conditions associated with static balance. You have your narrow base of support. You can raise your center of gravity. You have your sensory alteration, like closing your eyes. That's sensory removal. Sensory alteration would be moving your body. Sensory removal would be something like closing your eyes. All right, so moving down to slide number 12, as we kind of talk about dynamic balance. So dynamic balance is you're reacting to a changing surface. And when we say changing surface, more or less, you are moving. Okay, so you're actually moving the, and that's why the ground or the surface is changing because you're moving to, and that creates a different surface every step. Progression, which we want you to memorize, goes from narrow stance to hip width stance. From that, it goes to split stance or staggered stance, and from there, it goes to tandem stance and single leg stance. So know that order. Narrow stance is just feet together. Hip width stance is feet hip width apart. Split stance is one leg forward and back. Same thing with staggered stance. Tandem stance is one leg forward and back, but on the same, like on a balance beam. And then a single leg is obviously one leg. So some single leg stand patterns. Specifically, you're looking to identify muscle imbalances during those patterns. Specifically, the hurdle step screen is a great balance single leg assessment that you can perform. And exercises that you can do are going to be single leg stands, static balance on a single leg, utilize different tools like a dumbbell on one side of the body in the hand, or transition the dumbbell, or hold a medicine ball, or rotate with a medicine ball to challenge the balance. Then you also always want to progress by adding in upper and lower extremity movement while maintaining balance. So touch your toe in front of you, touch your toe to the side, touch your toe to the back. That is shifting a lower extremity. Move your arms to the side, overhead, to the front, to the back. Can also be shifting of the upper body or upper extremity. All right, so now we're getting into movement training as we go down to slide 13. Movement training is phase 2, and movement training is all about learning the 5 primary fitness movements. And we want you to have the 5 primary fitness movements memorized. And specifically, it directly says a test question might be that after the client has improved core function, it's time to integrate movement training, which is more or less the 5 primary fitness movements. So once you've taught someone and they really understand and have a good grip on the strength, or we'll say stabilizing their core and great core function, good core balance and activation. That's when we move to the five primary fitness movements, which make up movement training. What are the five movement training primary fitness movements? The bend and lift, single leg movements like walking or lunging or climbing upstairs, pushing, so pushing horizontally and vertically, so a chest press forward and an overhead press for the shoulders, pulling horizontally and vertically, that's going to be pulling towards you in a machine row, and or pull up, which is pulling overhead. And then rotation, those are the five primary fitness movements. So once again, memorize these, bend and lift, single leg movements, pushing, pulling, and rotation. All right, so moving to slide number 14 as we continue with movement training. Movement training, they're going to refer to the bend and lift first, typically, as that's one of the more common movements, or it is probably the most common movement referring to activities of daily living in humans, picking something up off the floor. So in order to do this, we want to make sure that you guys understand to teach the bend and lift. One of the best things to do is teach the hip hinge exercise and engage the transverse abdominis. And first you need to ensure, that ensures proper alignment first. And then specifically, when alignment looks off as far as the bend and lift, definitely teach the hip hinge exercise. So specifically to read that second bullet point, when alignment looks off, such as increased lumbar lordosis or increased thoracic rounding or even an excessive forward lean, always regress them to teach that hip hinge exercise because that really teaches someone how to utilize their glutes and extensor muscles as opposed to just their quadriceps. They talk about quad dominance versus glute dominance, and the hip hinge teaches glute dominance, which is what you want in the bend and lift. And then always, always, always before squatting, engage the transverse abdominis. And during the squat, ensure proper tibial and torso alignment. That's the parallel lines that run through the tibia and through the torso. Make sure those are always, we'll say, parallel. And there's a picture of that in your textbook. All right, but yeah, those are definitely questions that might make it onto the exam, especially around the bend and lift screen. So keep that in mind. Engage transverse abdominis. Make sure there's proper tibial and torso alignment, and then always regress to the hip hinge if something looks off. All right, single leg is referring to the lunging, walking, or running, climbing stairs, things like that. An example exercise might be something like the half kneeling lunge rise, walking lunges. You always want to have 90 degrees of knee flexion on each leg, and then a multi-directional lunge, nothing too crazy there, just to explain it a little bit further. And then the final slide, as we talk about the movements, pushing. So there's overhead pushing, and then there is anterior pushing, or horizontal and then vertical pushing. So overhead would be the barbell press overhead, shoulder press, some may call it, and the anterior pushing would be something like a bench press or a push-up in which you're pushing horizontally. So bilateral and unilateral presses can be utilized. This a bilateral press is more equal. A unilateral press requires more core activation since the force is trying to get you to rotate. If a client shows dominance on one side, perform the unilateral press to make sure or to ensure equal work. This is basically if you see someone failing on the right arm before failing on the left arm or vice versa. Then work with the same weight and get the same amount of reps using a single arm activity, like a single arm dumbbell press or something. The overhead press and the thoracic matrix, just basically know the difference between an anterior push or horizontal push and a vertical push. All right, pulling, the same thing. You have a vertical pull and you have a horizontal pull. You can do bilateral pulls or unilateral pulls, single arm or both arms at the same time. Vertical pull would be like a lat pull down. It's pulling vertically down towards the body, starting from overhead. And then horizontal pulling would be starting in front of you and pulling towards your body. And then the final movement training, or five primary movements, is going to be rotational movements. A lot of people think of rotational movements as like abdominal work or oblique work, things like wood chops, hay balers, rotating a golf or swinging a golf club, baseball bat, hockey stick, those sort of rotational movements are what they're referring to. All right, cool. So hopefully that assisted you a little bit with programming for the stability, mobility, and movement phases 1 and 2. And specifically, as we go down into the book lecture, we're going to get a lot more detailed into how we can put a program together, as well as what to understand from this chapter. That's really going to allow you to be more practical and applicable when working with a client. All right, that sounds good. I will see you down below at the book lecture. You got a nice 3 hours of book lecture coming at you, so enjoy those. And keep on keeping on. Keep up with the good steady work. Cheers.